Court appointed is meant to be for entertainment purposes and basic legal information only.
Nothing in this podcast should be considered as legal representation nor legal advice.
Only use the knowledge presented herein to dazzle your friends or possibly win bar trivia.
Dr. Lawyer, idiot chief. For my life is songs of grief with the yellow fear and fearless eyes. It's never all the times I've tried.
Welcome to Court Appointed. Two Dudes' Perspective on Legal Frivolity. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer dude and a judge.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude.
Well, how are you doing this week, Tommy?
Well, I'm hanging right in there, not doing too bad for an old feller. Or an odd feller.
Had a little unexpected chance to see you this week.
Yeah, where did I see you? Where did we run into each other?
Well, I was driving home, and I saw you sitting on your dad's porch, giving him some baked goods.
Yeah, Mary had made some cinnamon rolls, and I was sitting there on the front porch dropping them off, and you pulled up in your big white truck.
Big white truck.
I just looked up, saw it coming. I said, I wonder if that's Michael in there. Yep, there was old Michael, dude.
Yeah, I looked over, I said, hey, that's Tommy. Yeah. I haven't seen him in ages.
Yeah, I go out and visit with my poor dad. He gets into the spirit of Halloween. He bought candy to give out, and he decided to steal some of it for himself. And he bit into a Butterfinger candy bar and broke out his front tooth.
Oh, that's no good.
No, it was an implant already, so it broke out the implant. Hmm. So he came walking into my office the next day and smiled, and I said, what are you, auditioning for the part of the jack-o'-lantern?
Oh, that's funny, because that's why we were discussing dentists, and we realized that we have the same dentist.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, I didn't understand where that conversation came from, but now it makes a bit more sense.
Yeah, so my poor dad, he's got to get that thing replaced. They've got to go in and replace the, you know, it's like a post up in there, and that broke apparently. So,
well, let me ask you a question. Did mm-hmm. you get his permission to discuss his private health information on this podcast?
Well, I don't know that that's private health information that he broke a tooth. Oh. I mean, pretty much anybody that sees him, if he smiles, they're going to know it.
That's pretty obvious.
Yeah, it's pretty obvious.
Well, the reason I brought that up is because today's episode, we are going to be talking about COVID, the pandemic, contact tracing, and issues that relate to the pandemic and protected health information, or PHI, as they say.
All right. Well, we could do all that, and I guess all the HIPAA compliance that goes along with it.
That's true. There's lots of different compliance issues that are out there. So as I was saying, the pandemic has brought up lots of issues that relate to PHI, which is protected health information, and also personal identifiable information for employees, PII. So as you know, it's important to contain and stop the spread of COVID-19. And one of the best ways to do that is in order to isolate any kind of outbreak is to have some sort of workplace safety plan for employers to be able to monitor their employees to make sure there's proper social distancing and to notify employees if there's a need for them to self-quarantine if they've come in close contact with somebody in the workplace who has symptoms of or has tested positive for COVID. This process is called contact tracing. And I had never heard of contact tracing until just recently. But it's become,
oh, really?
Yeah, it's become kind of a very popular phrase.
Well, I never heard of it till the outbreak of the pandemic, and then that's one of the things that Fauci talked about, but we have not done a real good job with it.
No, probably not. But the faster you identify affected individuals, then you can notify other people that were around them, and that will stop the virus from spreading. But there's some obvious things that might pop up as problems if you're looking at this from an employer point of view. Once you have an employee that's been exposed to a confirmed case of COVID or possibly even a suspected case of COVID, what are you supposed to do at that point? It's kind of a good question. I mean,
yeah. Well, I mean, obviously, you don't, if you have an employee that was exposed, Well, I mean, it depends on were they exposed at work. And if they're at work, you want to quarantine everybody away from them, or get them to quarantine away from everybody else so that they don't do anything. But you got to get them tested, and we got to follow up, and we got to see who was exposed.
Well, it's a very fine line that the employer has to walk between protecting the privacy of the different affected individuals, their employees, and trying to ensure the safety of everybody else. So it's like a extremely messy intersection of the CDC, the EEOC, and OSHA. So that's the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, and the Occupational Safety and Health Administration. So you have all these different entities that have all these different things that you're required to do, and it's like kind of a minefield, I think, for employers right now as to what to do. Because you're not supposed to ask employees about their health issues, because that could be a violation under the ADA, the Americans with Disabilities Act. So there's another piece of government legislation there that kind of can hinder you from trying to isolate and do some contact tracing.
Well, and the other thing about it is, if a person knows that they have it and you tell them not to come to work and they're not going to get paid, they might decide that they're going to come to work anyway. Then what do you do?
Yeah, well, that's a good question. That brings up issues. I mean, could that be a workers' compensation type claim? Did it happen during the course and the scope of their employment? Did they contract it at work? And if so, and they're being forced to miss work, then are they entitled to workers' compensation benefits? You know, that's a question out there. Mm-hmm. I don't know. And, I mean, could that be some sort of medical condition, like under FMLA, the Family Medical Leave Act? Could they be entitled to some other kind of disability where they're protected, not able to be sent home or anything like that? I mean, there's just so many different facets of this out there. It's just kind of crazy.
Yeah, I guess not only that, they're finding now that there may be some long-term effects on your lungs if you had it, even if you didn't have it real bad.
Yeah. Now, one of the main things that a lot of employers and places are doing is when you first come in, they're taking your body temperature measurements.
That body temperature and your body measurements?
Body temperature measurements. So they're measuring your body temperature.
Oh, okay.
Not your body. They're not checking your waistline.
That's good, because I've gained the COVID-19.
Yeah. You need to check your inseam there, Tommy. So that's some, you know, in a lot of places, taking somebody's temperature could be considered some sort of medical examination or something to determine if somebody is basically fit to come to work.
True.
And that would be prohibited under the ADA. But because we are in a crisis situation, the EEOC has clarified that because COVID-19 constitutes a direct threat, employers are permitted to measure all employees' body temperature. Employers cannot single out specific employees to have their temperature taken unless the employer has reasonable belief based on objective evidence that worker may have COVID-19. CDC guidelines recommend that employers measure the temperature of workers who were or may have been exposed to the virus as a pre-screening measure before they are allowed to return to the workplace. Employers can also bar employees from remaining at work if they refuse to have their temperature taken. So if you say, I'm not having my temperature taken, then employers are allowed to actually send their workers home. And like I said, at my office, we have someone that takes our temperature every morning when you come in to make sure you don't have a temperature.
Mm-hmm.
Just kind of a precautionary type thing to make sure that no one comes in with a temperature and unknowingly has COVID with maybe just a slight little fever or something like that. So it's been kind of interesting. I've learned that my temperature is actually, I always thought 98.6 was the temperature everybody had. I usually have like 97.2. I'm like, I must be kind of cold-blooded.
Well, it also depends on the device doing it. I mean, like those ones that check your forehead or whatever that don't really touch you, that may be what's normal for them. The ones that they do in your ear, those, mm-hmm. that might be a little bit, there's like a range that's normal in there, because it is a little bit different, you know. Now, if they stick it under your tongue, it's going to be more at that 98.6.
Well, I mean, even the one, I have one here at the house, and I've, during the past 6 months, I think I've taken my temperature more than I ever have in my life, and it's regularly in the 97s as well, so.
Well, maybe you are a cool runner.
I don't know. Mm-hmm. So, but that's one thing that's, if you're kind of curious about, that employers are actually allowed to take your temperature, because that is a, a valid way to screen people for any kind of COVID.
Maybe it's the ice water in your veins.
I'm cooler than the other side of the pillow.
That's right.
Now, some other questions that employers can ask their employees, which they normally would not be allowed. They're allowed to ask employees who come into work if they've had any COVID exposure or any other health-related issues, if they've had COVID-19, if they've been tested for COVID-19, if they are experiencing symptoms commonly associated with COVID-19, if they have come in contact with anyone who's been diagnosed with COVID-19 or who has experienced symptoms of the virus. Employers can also ask employees who report feeling sick at work or who call in sick if they are experiencing symptoms of COVID-19. And they can also bar people from remaining at work if they refuse to answer any of these questions. But again, if an employer is seeking a direct inquiry to a specific employee, the ADA says that the employer must have reasonable belief based on objective evidence that the employee might have COVID-19. So for example, if they don't ask everybody this when they come in, but they single out one employee, that person better have a sniffly nose or coughing a lot or something along those lines before you start asking those questions. You can't just randomly single people out. So
reasonable suspicion, huh?
Reasonable suspicion. So they're trying to avoid any kind of possible discriminatory practices because that's not what they want to do. They don't want to open the door for discrimination.
Right.
But they want to make sure that what they're doing is reasonably calculated to lead to the extinguishment or limiting the exposure to COVID-19. So kind of very similar to the Supreme Court test whenever you have strict scrutiny, kind of the same way. It has to be narrowly tailored for a specific interest.
Unlike my jacket.
Unlike your jacket.
It's not narrowly tailored.
Wasn't it extra narrowly tailored?
How's that? Yeah, I couldn't wear it. It was so extra narrowly tailored.
That's what I thought. The other thing that has become kind of a big issue is whether or not an employer can administer COVID-19 testing to detect the presence of the virus. And that has kind of arisen at the intersection of workplace safety and employee privacy. The EEOC has clarified that employers are permitted to administer COVID-19 testing to employees before they enter the workplace to determine if they have the virus and as a condition to allowing them to return to the workplace. So if you're able to, if you hire the proper medical personnel to come to your office and do that, then you can actually have these medical screenings at your office. So it seems to me that would be a really extreme step, but you could do it for sure.
Well, it depends.
Part of the same thing.
Yeah, if you're a big plant, maybe something like that is something you want to look into. Small businesses couldn't afford to do something like that.
No, absolutely not. I mean, could you pay a nurse or a doctor to be on staff to administer tests to all your employees?
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
Now, there's a couple other kind of hot button topics that are out there with regard to workplaces and COVID. But before we get to those, I think we actually have a motion today before the court.
Why, yes, if it pleases your coronaship, we'd like to approach the bench to pay for court costs.
All right. Who do we have on the docket?
We have on the docket today our good friends at Care Of.
Care Of is a wellness brand that makes it easy to maintain your health goals with a customized vitamin plan that helps you feel your best today and supports you long term.
It's high quality products that meet personalization. All of Care Of's products are formulated with good for you, clean ingredients that are backed by science.
And Care Of is super transparent about the research and sourcing behind each one of their products.
Your recommendations come in daily, individually wrapped packets that are perfect for getting back into a routine.
And how do you get daily individual wrapped packets? Well, what you do is you take Care Of's in-depth 5-minute online quiz, and they ask you questions about your diet, your lifestyle, and health concerns to help you address your specific wellness goals.
Care Of's holistic online quiz is like getting a one-on-one consultation with a nutritionist, all without leaving your house.
You can get a personally tailored approach to your unique health needs. Follow Care Of's expert recommendations or adjust your pack at any time. What you receive is totally up to you.
Fall back into a healthy routine. As the seasons change, it's important to get ahead of taking care of your immune system.
It takes about 30 days for your body to adapt to new nutrients, so now is a great time to update your vitamin and wellness routines to help support your immune system this fall.
Kara's products go beyond vitamins and supplements to include protein powders and boosts to help supplement your workouts as you move indoors in the colder months.
Now, both of us have actually gone to the website, taken the quiz, and gotten our personalized packets. And I got to tell you, it was a fun experience that was painless.
Yeah, it was very easy, and the packets came with our names on them, so we would remember those are our vitamins.
That's right. It's not fun to go into a store and have to walk down a vitamin aisle and try to pick things out. This quiz actually tailors what it is you need and recommends what they think you should take.
So, if you want to get 50% off your first Care of order, go to takecareof.com and enter the code COURT50.
That's right, 50% off your first Care of order. And all you have to do, go to takecareof.com and enter the code COURT50.
You'll be glad that they take care of you.
So every morning when I go into work and I have my temperature taken, I'm always wondering, if my temperature was a little high but I didn't have corona, wouldn't that be kind of like a nice little day off?
Well, yes, but you still get paid whether you go to work or not. That's the difference.
I do, but if I didn't get paid, if I didn't have sick pay, then I would probably not have that thought. But one of the things when you manage COVID-19 exposure in the community and at your work is you have to make sure sick employees remain away from the office until they get back to full health. So the EEOC and the CDC both permit employers to require employees to leave the office and remain at home if they have COVID-19 or are otherwise experiencing symptoms associated with the virus. The EEOC has further provided that once those sick employees are set to return to work, requiring a doctor's note stating the employee is fit for duty before returning to work is permitted under the ADA. So this brings up a whole other issue, is that you're actually requiring an employee to go to a doctor to get a note saying they're healthy to come back to work. Well, I mean, do they have health care? We don't have mandated government health care in this country.
Right. So,
I mean, what happens if you don't have insurance? I mean, there are some people, even though you're supposed to have insurance or have face tax consequences, there are some people who don't have insurance.
They've taken the tax consequences out of there.
Oh, they have?
Yeah, you don't have to have insurance anymore. You don't have that paid incentive to do it.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
So, well, I mean, you have the issue that everybody might not have insurance, but you're going to require them to have a doctor's note to come back to work. So,
yeah, and that costs money. Those things aren't free.
It does. Now, I know a lot of employers, what they'll do is they will pay for any kind of COVID-related issues you might have from work. So if you need to go get tested and you have a copay or you don't have insurance, then the employer will pay for you to go do it because it's that important for you to go have that done. Likewise, employers, a lot of times, if you don't have insurance or can't afford to go to the doctor, some employers are paying for their employees to go to the doctor to get clearance from the doctor, they can come back to work. Now, this is assuming they don't have any real issues with it. You know, obviously, I think if you have major symptoms from COVID, then mm-hmm. people are obviously seeing a doctor, being treated in the hospital or things like that. The mm-hmm. doctor's note is not really an issue at that point. We're talking more about the kind of real mild cases that are out there.
Or if somebody just took a few days off and said they thought they had it or something.
Right.
But then tested negative.
Yeah, just like, wasn't feeling too hot, so I decided to stay home.
Yeah. But the whole thing is a real mess because there's, you know, you've got the conflict with people's personal health information, but at the same time, other people need to know what to do because it affects their livelihood. It affects their personal interactions. It affects what they do. And when they just tell you, look, you were possibly exposed, good luck.
Yeah.
That's about all the guidance you get. There's no plan to this or anything. We had a situation where one of the guys at our work, he calls me on a Saturday and says he got a call from the school that said his daughter may have been exposed to someone that tested positive at school. That was the extent of it.
Yeah.
So we don't know when. We don't know, you know, who it was, so that we know whether, you know, the daughter then could make an assessment. No, I wasn't in proximity to that person or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, because they don't have the exact information of where you were standing in relation to this person. Maybe you were just in the same room with the person. So, yeah.
And that's one of those things that, again, it's a very fine line that you have to walk with regard to these things. So school boards, I mean, they have a duty to keep privacy of their students. So they can't necessarily disclose that.
Right.
That's, but that's another issue.
Yeah. And so it left us hanging with, first of all, we don't know if everybody that employee works with at work may have gotten exposed, and we need to tell all of them to stay home and quarantine from their families or have themselves tested.
Yeah.
So the only thing we could do is make some assumptions from the news reports that said they told us about a cluster that had broken out at the school. So so we knew that maybe that must be where it was. And then we made some phone calls to some people that we knew, and we were able to ascertain where his daughter possibly could have gotten infected from and what day it was. And fortunately it was on Friday. So we knew then that he couldn't have been exposed and then exposed our other people. Yeah. Because this was on the Saturday after that Friday he called me. So that way we knew our other people were all right. Well, we didn't know about him. So I said, well, you've got to wait a few days and then go get tested. And if you need help paying for it, we will help you pay for it.
Yeah. Well, that's the responsible thing to do as an employer.
Yeah. But it's still though, we had to make a lot of assumptions and guesses just to try to figure out who was safe and who wasn't.
Yeah. And that's part of the problem. It seems like there's a lot of secrecy that goes along with this. Part of it is people trying to be cautious about other people's privacy, but other parts of it seem to be a bit more about, you know, there's some sort of stigma about it or some sort of problem. You just don't want to tell people. But if you want to stop the spread of it, then you've got to tell people. You got to be up front and you got to do proper contact tracing to make sure that you're not exposed to it.
You're right. People do act like there's a stigma or that only dirty people get it or something like that. And it's got nothing to do with that. It's a virus just like the flu.
Or even in this day and age, you know, people that weren't being careful, they weren't being cautious, they weren't wearing masks, that they're shame, you know, it's shameful because they weren't doing something that they were supposed to be doing. That's why they got it. You know, it's like, I mean, you can get it going anywhere. You can get it doing anything.
Yeah.
And frankly, it's not feasible for a lot of people just to hole up in their house and not leave their house for a year.
Yeah.
I mean, I got to go to work.
But you see some of these gatherings and it's like people are like, well, they're from the same upper class neighborhood that we are, so they wouldn't have it. No, it is not like that, you know. But you see people that are having these parties, like, how can they do that? Well, they wore a tux in here. They wouldn't have COVID.
Yeah. The old tuxedo defense.
Yeah.
So when you're disclosing actual COVID-19 cases or suspected COVID-19 cases, that's kind of one of the real danger areas for employers, because you don't want to go over that line and give away too much information, because there could be something that's protected. But you also need to make sure that all the employees are informed about their coworkers' issues. So employers are permitted to, and actually encouraged to, inform other employees of their coworkers' confirmed or suspected case of COVID-19 and their possible resulting exposure to the virus, so long as the disclosure would not reveal the identity of the sick employee. So that's the one catch. Importantly, though, employers must ensure the confidentiality of the sick employee's identity as required by the ADA in making the disclosure to coworkers. Employers have to refrain from doing two things. First, specifically disclosing the identity of the sick employee, and second, disclosing other information that would allow coworkers to identify the sick individual. So you actually can't give away the exact person as to who it was, but you kind of have to let them know, hey, were you possibly in close contact with this person? So it's this double-edged sword. Like, you can't really say who it is, but you got to say you were exposed, but you know,
that just sounds like governmental cover your ass wording, because there isn't any way around that. It's like, you know, I got three people in that department. If one of them's off, and I'm asking the other two, how much were you around this person because they may be off due to COVID, then that's pretty much who it was.
Yeah, or if it's a job one person does, and you say, hey, so-and-so is going to be out for 14 days. We need you to do their job for them. Oh, by the way, we had a COVID exposure here at work. It's, and, who do you think it is?
Did you drink after anybody?
So, you know, it's definitely one of those things. It's kind of a hard thing. And, you know, employers are allowed to disclose the names of employees to public health agencies if they know somebody was exposed and things along those lines, because that's one of the exceptions to it. But, you know, really, you're not supposed to disclose the person's name if they are, you know, tested positive, or just let you know that.
Well, that's a slippery slope. I'll tell you that. There's too many, you should do this, but you can't do that. And they all conflict with each other.
Yeah. They have to also keep proper records. So if you're taking down this information, like you're taking people's temperatures and things like that, employers need to actually maintain those records to show that they were doing the proper steps, and additionally to show that they weren't singling people out or doing things weird or anything along those lines. So it's, you have to make sure you have good records, because basically what you're doing is you're taking small time little medical health examinations by taking people's temperature. So that does fall under protected health information. So if you are taking down this protected health information, then conversely, what you need to do is you need to make sure that you are protecting it as well. Because if somebody walks into your office and takes all your medical records of employees, then that's a major breach. That could be a problem. That's like somebody walking into a hospital and getting medical files, kind of.
True.
On a, yeah. But, you know, a smaller scale. So once you get this information and you have it, at that point, you have an extra duty to protect it. So, you know, if you store it online, then you got to make sure there's no cyber attacks coming in to steal everybody's temperatures.
Yeah.
I'm sure that's what Russia wants. Russia wants to know what everybody's temperatures were at work.
We will get their temperatures. It will serve the fatherland.
Okay. I'll accept that as a Russian.
It wasn't really. It wasn't a very good one.
No, I don't
know. And they're not the fatherland. I should have thrown in a comrade in there.
That's right, comrade.
We know how hot you were, comrade. We have the notes.
Now, there are some things that technology-wise that I believe are being put into place that is kind of making some of this a little bit easier to deal with.
Well, you would think so. But it actually, it's not. And it's, you know, it's for good reason, I guess, because there have been so many data breaches and stolen identities and all this other kind of stuff. The last thing anybody wants is for some other technology to be tracking us and dealing with information that we have that can once again go out to the world to use against us.
That's true, but haven't they been developing some apps to let you know if you've been around somebody who's positive?
They have. They have contact tracing apps that have been available. Now, Google and Apple went to work together to get something done, and they actually got it completed back in April. Here we are in almost November, and it still really isn't rolled out to the point where it's effective. And a lot of it has to do with distrust and the shotgun approach that everybody took to it. Contact tracing through apps was thought to be, this will be the way to get things done.
Yeah, it makes sense. You would think it would be.
But it always involves a trade-off between privacy and public health. Now, in Asia, countries like South Korea use contact tracing with great effect to keep a lid on their epidemics, but at a significant cost to the individual's privacy. As well as deploying legions of interviewers, South Korean authorities also use phone logs, card transaction records, and surveillance cameras to monitor infected citizens' locations and find their contacts.
Wow, I mean, they're actually doing like full-on investigations to figure this stuff out.
Oh, yeah. And it's all in, it's like, it doesn't matter about privacy or anything. It has to do with the public health. So, you know, it's where do you weigh on that? Now, in more privacy-conscious Europe, many citizens and lawmakers were uncomfortable with such a big privacy trade-off. So other factors are important, too, like ensuring that people who have been told to quarantine by the app actually follow the instruction. In the UK, only 18.2% of people who developed symptoms reported completely self-isolating after the symptoms began, according to a King's College London survey. and just 10.9% of people who were told by contact tracers that they may have been exposed to the virus, but may not have had symptoms, stayed at home for the 14 days as required. The study, which has not yet been peer-reviewed, found that non-adherence was highest among people with dependent children, members of socioeconomic groups hit hardest by the pandemic, and essential workers, suggesting that state support for a person who is instructed to change their lifestyle is essential for a contact tracing system to work effectively. If you ask people to isolate and quarantine, then somehow they need support. Now, by contrast, in Austria, which has a generous system for paying a full wage to workers forced to quarantine and fines for those who don't comply, only 1.5% of people told to self-quarantine were found to have broken guidelines.
That's amazing. If you actually give them the means to do it without suffering a hardship, they'll actually do it.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's
who would have thought?
Yeah. Well, that's one of the things. That's what they were saying. That's why it's been so shotgun here in America. There has not been any rolled out form in how to do this. And then there's no incentive. They tell you, okay, you got to quarantine for 14 days. If you're in a job where you're paid by the hour and you're not going to get paid, then how do you expect that? Why wouldn't the government automatically have something in place that would pay you for it? But here we are still trying to figure out how to use the contact tracing apps, and we're almost coming up with a vaccine by now, and you'd think that the app part would have been easier. Like I say, Apple and Microsoft did their work. Apple and Google did their work before by April. And it's still not rolled out.
Well, you know, even if you're not paid by the hour, if you are a salaried employee and you can't work for 14 days, you start to worry about your job. I mean, that's kind of like, well, you know, I mean, I don't know. I mean, yeah. I most people probably do. It's like that. You're not feeling like a very productive member of your company or your workplace.
And your boss might start getting the idea just how essential is this person.
Yeah.
We got along this long without him. I had a guy, boss at the railroad one day. He said, why isn't Mickey on the conference call? And I said, he's on vacation. Well, he was on vacation last week. Well, yesterday he's been on vacation the last 2 weeks. What, are you telling me he took 3 weeks vacation in a row? And I said, well, he had 3 weeks and he took them all. Well, by God, if he can be gone for 3 weeks, we don't need that job. And he cut it.
Did they really?
Yeah, they cut his job.
Yeah, so that does make you worry a little bit about your job. It's like, well,
yeah,
we didn't miss him for 2 weeks, and I don't need him.
Nothing suffered, so, you know, who cares?
Wow, but that's a crazy story.
USA Today found just 14 states with contact tracing apps in the Apple and Google app stores. New Jersey, New York, Arizona, North Carolina, Florida, Delaware, Virginia, Nevada, South and North Dakota, Wyoming, Alabama, Rhode Island, and Pennsylvania. The New York and New Jersey apps just recently launched, and Arizona and California are testing the software to see if they're going to do it. The idea was that they created a Bluetooth signal from the phones, and it would send these signals to others who have the app. So first of all, it's dependent upon everybody signing up for the app.
Right.
The less people that sign up, the less effective you are.
And have your Bluetooth turned on.
Yeah, have your Bluetooth turned on. And it says that if you are diagnosed positive for the coronavirus and you inform the app, then messages are then sent to everyone you came in contact with. If you have been exposed, your app will notify you and give you further instructions. So in other words, what they're saying is this doesn't have like Mike Meadows is this person. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have that. All it does is it is just you are a random series of numbers or symbols that make you up. So yours just passes by some other random series of numbers and symbols. So that's all that it is. So if anybody got that information, all they're going to see is that. It's not going to be saying Mike Meadows and here's your birth date and here's your, all it's going to say is this random numbers and all this, you know, is a different person.
That's all I am to you. I'm just 10110001. That's all
I
am.
That's all you are. And a few other emojis thrown in there. But people still are hesitant to use it. But all it does is say, oh, this random set of numbers was infected. It went by this random set of numbers. So it sends all that random set of numbers a message. You have possibly been exposed. You should go to the nearest facility and get tested.
Now, that does involve a little bit of trust. That's all the information they're taking.
Yeah, that's it. That's all it does is say that you've gone by and your random numbers triggered off of somebody else's random numbers. So that tells you should get tested. But here's where the failure starts breaking down. First of all, our testing, it's gotten better, but it was terrible for the first, 5 months? Yep. You didn't know where to go, and you didn't know if it was going to be covered by insurance or anything like that. Why wouldn't it be free? The government has a vested interest in people being tested to try to control it. Why shouldn't it be free, you know? Yeah. But you didn't know where the tests were. The tests were not good enough. First of all, if you don't find out till 6 or 7 days after you've been exposed, then you're going to get tested, and you don't find out again until 6 or 7 days after that, which is what it was taking when they first started. By then, hundreds of other people could have been exposed in between.
Or you've already quarantined for that time period, so you've missed 14 days at work. And then you find out you're negative. And you're like, oh, whew, that was good. So you go back to work. And then you find out you may have been exposed. And you start the cycle over again.
Exactly. And that has happened to people. They have been back and forth at work because of various times they may have been exposed, even though they continually tested negatives. So they didn't have proper testing procedures in place. Contact tracing could not keep up with everybody. And then, like we spoke about, if you were told you have to quarantine for 14 days because you've possibly been exposed, a lot of people just couldn't afford to do it.
Yeah.
So they didn't do it because there was no plan to pay you for it. I mean, the next step in that triggering should have been that it automatically puts you on a list, your random group of numbers and symbols.
We're going to send a paycheck to this random group of numbers and symbols.
But the first app that was developed by MIT researchers, and it was relied on GPS signals. But it failed for two reasons. One was people didn't trust the GPS signals because that meant they were actually tracking your movements.
Yeah.
For the random numbers to say you walked by somebody, that's not tracking your movements.
And those GPS, are they exactly, how accurate are they?
Well, that's the other thing, too, is the GPS is not very accurate, and it can't tell you. All it can tell you is this guy was in your general area. Yeah. It can't tell you he got within 6 feet of you and was there for 10 minutes. All it can tell you is he passed somewhere in the general vicinity of where you were at a given point. So that's not much.
I don't know why that made me think of the Monty Python line, whenever they're outside the castle and the French are inside. It's the very beginning.
Mm-hmm.
I fart in your general direction.
Yeah, when they're trying to insult them.
Yeah. Your mother smells of elderberries.
But when Google and Apple first came out with the app, here's what they said. They said they plan to be hands-off. The companies whose operating systems control virtually all U.S. smartphones would provide the underlying technology and guidance to the states, but each state would select developers to design and launch the apps and sort out how to integrate them into the local health systems. That was meant to give states flexibility, but instead it turned digital contact tracing into a political football and a headache for public health officials. Only six states, Alabama, Arizona, Nevada, North Dakota, Virginia, and Wyoming signed on to that vision. 44 did not. Recently, Apple and Google acknowledged their shortcomings with that state-by-state approach. Now, instead of relying on states to develop their own, Apple will offer an option built into its operating system, and Google will provide custom apps for each state. States will need to opt in, but the tech companies will take care of more of what is solidly in their hands, the technology.
Yeah.
So they would what they did is they would work with a local person, a local vendor, and get the app put out. But that was the only one that could do it. And they left it up to the states, and the states just didn't have the ability to do that.
I can't imagine that. The private industry took care of something quickly, and then the public sector couldn't keep up. Shocking.
Yeah. But they should have just handled it from the beginning. That's to say, the technology has been available since April, and we still don't have it widespread. Still, some countries rushed to develop apps using this system. Germany and the UK abandoned apps they had built in favor of new ones based on the Apple Google scheme. In Ireland, around 40% of smartphone users have installed the country's COVID tracker app. It says that the system has sent out more than 800 exposure notifications since it launched on July 7th, just before a recent spike in cases. Mac Criosta says the Irish effort has faced pushback over privacy and security, but the government has responded with a coordinated national plan and consistent messaging. He says those responsible for designing and developing national COVID apps meet regularly on Zoom to discuss ideas, problems, and successes. It's beers on a Friday night with guys from all over the world, he says. No one from the U.S. has ever attended.
I would be willing to go.
Well, yeah, especially if they're supplying the beer.
Yeah, beers on a Friday night.
But you heard one of the things, though, it was that consistent messaging they have gotten from the top down. That was part of it, too. We have not had that because there's too much politics that are involved in the thing.
Oh, yeah.
And the politics are what is keeping us from making a good decision. So we had the good technology, and we had a chance to use that could have possibly saved some people some heartache and exposure, and it could have kept us from having to shut things back down or having the spike that we're having now. But we have not been able to sell that because of inconsistency and not having a good plan. And so, you know, if you've got 12% of the people with that app, you're not going to have any success in it really doing its job. And here's what's really amazing to me. You know what number they said we needed to be at for the app to be successful and have positive results against COVID?
I'll say 45.
Well, that's lower than I would have thought you'd say, but it's 33. They said if we could get 33% buy-in to people with phones to have that app on, that we could have put a dent in COVID and how it was affecting us and what it was shutting down.
Yeah. I almost said 33, but then I thought, no, that's too cliche of a number to pick.
I would have thought it would be 60 or 70% at least.
Yeah. I don't know. That's interesting to me. I'm sure there's some math behind that I'm not privy to or know how to use those fancy numbers and buttons on my calculator, but yeah.
Yeah. And there's some countries that are using the apps with great success. They include like Australia. Australia has used it and they've had a large number of people sign up for it. And they have done well. Shouldn't be any surprise. China and Russia have both done well because if they tell you you're going to have this app, you will have this app.
Yeah.
And if they tell you you're not going to leave the house for 14 days, you're not going to leave the house for 14 days.
Yeah, and if you do leave the house before 14 days, you might not leave the ground ever.
That's right. You may never leave your house again.
Yeah, you may no longer have a house.
You may never come home to your house again. Let's put it that way. That will go back to last week's episode.
Well, that's going to bring us to
legal briefs.
So this legal briefs is going to focus on acronyms, because I thought that would be the most interesting thing we could ask.
At least it's not a Kathmandu.
It's not a Kathmandu.
Yeah.
I'd like to go there someday. That's what I really, really want to do.
I think I'd really, really want to go.
So what does PHI stand for?
Personal health information.
Protected health information.
Oh, damn it.
What is PII?
Pie in the eye.
Personally identifiable information.
I'm sure I was going to say that when I got serious.
The CDC, what does that stand for?
The Communicative Disease Control.
Centers for Disease Control.
Oh, Centers for Disease Control. I should have known that.
And prevention, but they just got rid of the whole prevention thing. We don't worry about prevention. We're just, you know.
CDCP.
Yeah.
They didn't like to have the P on the end. It threw it off.
What is the EEOC?
Equal Employment Opportunity Commission.
Hey, Hey, ding, ding. That's 100% on that one.
Yeah, well, I've dealt with that one.
And what is OSHA?
OSHA is Occupational Safety and Health Administration.
That's right. I bet you had that on the railroad, didn't you?
Well, actually, we didn't have OSHA. They have their own, the FRA, the Federal Railroad Administration.
Really?
Yeah, that's who governs all workplace practices is FRA. His railroad has a lot of their own stuff. It's just like railroad. You don't get Social Security. You get railroad retirement. Yeah. You pay into railroad retirement instead of Social Security. So railroad's got a lot of things on their own.
Was old Mickey there that was on vacation for 3 weeks? Was he the FRA liaison? And they didn't even miss him, so they just got rid of him?
No. He was the trade master at a small little coal town. And they just decided, well, if he can be gone that long, we don't need him. We'll just let the people that are there run it. We don't need a leader. He was a supervisor there. They didn't fire him. He just worked somewhere else, and eventually he ended up back there. Nobody on the railroad ever gets fired. They just go away for a while, then come back, and they usually get paid for it.
I just want to teach him a lesson from freezing his vacation days.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, your vacation is your vacation. No one should ever begrudge it to. If you want to take it one day at a time or all at once, you should be allowed to do that, you know, as long as you go through the proper channels.
Well, they don't think so on the railroad, I guess.
No, the railroad, they don't think so kindly of that. Of course, I don't know what they think anymore. I've been gone almost 20 years, so I don't know what they think. Now, it's a different place.
Here's the last one, and it never really occurred to me what this stood for. And it's kind of one of those, like, hit your forehead, well, duh, type moments.
Mm-hmm.
COVID-19.
Well, I know that the 19 is for, it was discovered in 2019.
Right.
COVID is viral. I don't know. I'd just be killing. It'd be dead air here while I try to figure that out. I have heard it before. I did know that was an acronym.
Coronavirus Disease 2019.
Wow.
I mean, it makes perfect sense, right?
Yeah.
I never really thought about it. I'm like, oh, it's just COVID. I just thought it was one word. I didn't realize it was kind of an acronym thrown together like that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's they put the number as the year it was discovered.
Just brilliant. That's all I got to say about it. Brilliant.
Just brilliant. That's the only thing in all of this mess that anybody could agree on is what they're going to name it.
Yeah. Well, no, I don't think they even agreed on that to begin with.
Well, the coronavirus or COVID, unless you're Trump and he calls it the China virus.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I don't think he's called it that in a while. I think he's realized that was probably not going anywhere.
Well, no, he did it in the debate last week.
Did he really?
Yeah. Yeah, he did it in the debate.
Yeah, see, I haven't been watching the debates because, frankly, it doesn't really matter to me.
You didn't miss anything. Hell, I voted a month ago, so, you know, they could debate all they want. I sent my ballot in a month ago.
Good for you.
Probably one of those ones in the river they were talking about. In a trailer down by the river.
That's how you wind up down there.
Yep. In COVID quarantine.
COVID quarantine. So there's a lot of issues for employers out there and employees, and it's really a fine line of trying to maintain privacy and different rights for your employees. And it's just kind of weird times. I keep saying that again and again, but it's strange out there.
Yeah. So if they show up and say you're not doing what you're supposed to, just start saying a bunch of acronyms all together and they'll figure you know what you're talking about and they'll let you go.
I believe the FRA covers this. Doesn't that have to do with the railroad? Possibly. Thanks to everybody for listening, and thanks to MCRB for use of their song, Dr. Lawyer Indian Chief.
We're proud to be coming to you almost live from Smurl Studios, high atop Three Last Mountain.
And we want to thank Audio Boom for being a part of their network.
And we also want to thank the McElroy Stable of Podcasts for helping give us our start. Their podcasts include Mabim Bam, Sawbones, Still Buffering, and many other fine offerings.
If you have the chance, take the time to rate and review us on iTunes, especially if you like us. And if you didn't, don't bother.
You're not supposed to say that.
You're going to edit that out though, aren't you?
Why? You never did.
Thanks for listening. This has been Court Appointed. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude.
Hello. Welcome to Tommy's Random Thoughts. Today's random thought is election ads. I'm so glad that this election is only a day from being over, at least as of this release date is a day from being over. I can't stand all of these campaign ads that go up just trashing both candidates involved in a race. I mean, as a society, we have to pick, for example, the philandering, tax-evading, female-assaulting racist, or the senile, bribe-accepting, handsy guy as a person to represent us to the rest of the world. Now, I'm not talking about anyone in particular. I just made up an example of what we get in general. In other words, both candidates paint their opponent as a despicable human being, yet one of them will win and represent us, when it would seem from these ads that neither of them is fit. I know about the First Amendment and all that freedom of speech, yada, yada, yada. But what about the American psyche? What about the job that all of the ads do on us? It's no matter we have such a low opinion and distrust of the people that represent us in Washington. We have been told that they are all terrible people and are just there to rob from us and forget about us and line their own pockets. Of course we think of them all as the swamp, both parties. According to the ads, they're all crooks. So why would we be happy? Another thing that all this mudslinging does to us voters, it misleads us from what is important. Instead of hearing what positive changes they are going to make if elected, they just spread rumors about the opposition. There may be a speck of truth to what is being said, but most are exaggerations, half-truths, or something that is just taken completely out of context on purpose. So politicians never have to clearly express a plan or vision for us to evaluate what may help us or is most important to us. They're too busy defending themselves against the bad things being said about them and then promoting whatever rumors they can about the other guy. Why spoil a good campaign with facts or information? I personally believe that campaign advertising should be capped expenditure-wise and should only be allowed to be positive. You can't mention the other guy's name, and you just talk about what you're going to do to make the lives and welfare of your constituents better. Those kind of ads would be better than, then they might actually have to have a plan to get elected rather than just be a little less terrible than the other guy. I've said for many years, there are no heroes anymore to turn to and be great men or women to lead this country. You have to hold your nose and vote for any of them because by election time, they have both been so badly tainted by the other. I know what you're going to say, that positive campaigning is not possible. I would have probably agreed with you until I saw something last week that gave me just a glimmer of hope for us as a nation barren of leaders. In the Utah governor's race, both candidates appeared in an ad together. Now, I don't have this word for word because it took me by surprise and I was frankly shocked. The Republican and Democrat candidates each stood on opposite sides of the screen and said, and I'm paraphrasing, something to this effect. The Republican, "My opponent, Joe Smith, would have you believe he is the best candidate for this job." The Democrat, "Likewise, my opponent, John Doe, believes that he would be the better one to elect." The Republican, "The fact is, I like Joe, and I think he's a fine man. I just believe that my policies are better for our state at this time." The Democrat, "I have great respect for John as well, and I believe he will do a good job as your governor. I just believe that my plan for our state is better." The Republican, "So it really comes down to, who do you think has a better plan?" The Democrat, "So whether you are for his ideas or mine, I believe you will be getting a good man for the job." The Republican, "I believe that too. So just go out and vote." The Democrat, "Voting is the most important thing, and either way it goes, you win." Wow!
What a positive and unexpected message. I haven't seen anything like that ever. But I also have a hard time even remembering any positive campaigning for a long, long time. I wish all election advertising could be done in such a manner, and I give both of those gentlemen mad props for setting such a fine example for the rest of the garbage we have to sift through daily. Just one more day. Thank God. This has been Tommy's Random Thought.